Okay, call meeting to order. I'd like to ask anyone with a cell phone if you would be kind enough to turn it off, and if you have any other electronic devices, turn those off as well. I'd like to have a moment of silence, please. Stand and pledge of allegiance, please. I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Have a roll call, please.
Dennis Olson.
Here.
Bonnie Ryan.
Here.
Terry Robinson.
Here.
Ken Oppelger.
Here.
Clark Cochran.
Here.
Paul Graham.
Here.
Council member Charlie Hawkins has requested to be excused.
So moved. Second.
I'm sorry.
Called it.
I did.
Okay, thank you.
Seconded by Ken. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries 6-0. Next item is recognition and awards. We have a Blaine Builder Award for Mr. Tom Dorsey. And I don't have the... Do we have that there, Sherry?
Tom, go on up.
Tom?
Oh, boy. Tom, come on up here. Tom Dorsey was born in Seattle, however spent a lot of his life in the Monterey Bay area before he sailed his boat into Blaine 12 years ago. He had been looking for a location on the coast of Washington where he could live permanently aboard his boat. Blaine Harbor had just completed its new renovation, providing the perfect location for him to call home. Tom is always willing to give a helping hand. He enjoys volunteering for many Blaine events, such as the Jazz Festival on the 4th of July. He also assists with the Community Assistance Program, delivering Thanksgiving dinner boxes to families in the community. He also helps members of his church with small projects and yard games. Tom has an avid interest in astronomy and is a member of the Whatcom Association of Celestial Observers. Did I pronounce that correctly?
Whatcom.
Okay. You'll have to give us a little more detail on that. He has also experienced quite an adventure in his early teens, sailing a 24-foot sailboat with a friend from Monterey Bay to the Galapagos Islands.
Attempting to go eventually to New Zealand.
It's a recognition of all the things that you do for the community. We'd like to present this to you.
I am just overwhelmed, and I thank you all from the bottom of my heart. This is a bit of a surprise, if you can imagine, but I just don't know what to say. I guess I'm a little bit over the humble.
Thank you, Tom.
I'll try to do my best in the future.
Thank you, Tom. Next item on the agenda is audience participation. And we have, Sherry, we have, according to this, Marcus Perry with the BPA. Is that correct? Marcus, would you like to come forward?
Yes.
I'd like to introduce Marcus. He is our account executive with Bonneville Power Administration, and He's been kind enough to come up here to our humble city to give you a little bit of an overview of our relationship with Jay, who we buy our power from for our power utility.
That's correct. Thank you. First of all, I just want to say thank you for putting time on the agenda for me today. I just want to come out here, like my predecessor, George Ritt, who you may or may not be familiar with, said just to come out here every once in a while, talk to the council, provide an update on BPAs. That's kind of what I'm here today to talk about. I really have three items that I want to talk about. Fiscal year 2014-2015 rates, yep. Fiscal year 2014 rate period high watermark process, which is coming 2012 as Bonneville's 75th anniversary. So those are what I'm going to cover today. Let's start with the slide presentations over here for people in the audience. So slide three is where I'm going to start to really get into the meat. Fiscal year 2014-15 rates. So Bonneville operates on a two-year rate. So we're currently in the midst of the fiscal year 2012-13 rate period, and Bonneville's already looking forward to the rate setting process for 2014 and 15. So what I have on in that first, or slide three, are some of the drivers at a high level, the rate drivers that Bonneville is seeing as what's going to impact the rates in 14 and 15. The first one, net secondary revenue. What net secondary revenue is once Bonneville fulfills its obligation to serve preference utilities, any additional or surplus power we have available, we go out to the market and we sell it. The idea being the revenue we make off that we can use to offset rates in the future. So at this time, we are forecasting natural gas prices, since there's such an abundant supply of natural gas right now, the natural gas prices are very low, and that has a direct impact on the market price for electricity. So in the 14-15 rate period, we're forecasting that the market rates for electricity are going to be substantially lower. And what that means is we're going to have less secondary, net secondary revenue to help offset some of our future rate increases. So that's one of the main key drivers that we're facing. The other driver I have listed is program expenses. You know, Bonneville as a federal agency has a lot of programs that it operates, Fish and Wildlife, Columbia Generating Station, which is the one nuclear facility we have in our system, as well as, you know, the Bureau and the Army Corps of Engineers. Those program expenses all fall under Bonneville. So right now, Bonneville has begun what we call the IPR process, or Integrated Program Review process. And in that process, we invite the public to come and comment on, we get these groups to come and present what they're proposing for 14 and 15 program levels and expenses, and we get the public to comment on what they think of these proposals. And like I said, we've begun that process, and it should conclude later this year. So those are the two of the main drivers at a high level, what we're seeing. Now, there are some levers that Bonneville is implementing to help kind of curb the rate increase as well. The most important, most significant being the first bullet, Columbia Generating Station debt extension. So Energy Northwest operates the Columbia Generating Station, or the nuclear facility, and they just recently got licensed to extend the operation of the facility for another 20 years, from 2024 to 2044. So with that additional 20 years of operation, Bonneville is also extending its debt out 20 years. And what that means for the near term, 2014-2015 rates, is that we have less debt obligation in those years. We can use the amount of money we thought we would have to pay use for debt, we don't have to use anymore. The rate increase will not be as significant, or it can help curb some of these other drivers. And Bonneville is also employing other debt restructuring tools to help mitigate the rate impact, because we understand it's a tough time right now. So those are the 14 and 15 rate impacts that we're facing. The next topic I wanted to talk about was 2014-2015 rate period high watermark. This is slide four and five. So every 2 years, Bonneville resets its rates. Also, per our rate methodology, we establish a rate period high watermark every 2 years. And what the high watermark does, it serves as the demarcation line between what we call Tier 1 and Tier 2 power. Tier 1 power is the federal cost-based power that we provide to utilities, and above that high water mark is subject to market-based rates or a Tier 2 product that we offer. So that's how the tiering sort of works. What I have on this chart, the dashed purple line going horizontal at the very end says RHW in 14-15. That's the rate period high water mark for 2014-15. This is a forecast, but essentially, like I said, that line is the demarcation point. Each of these bars represent Blaine's forecasted load for those years. So any portion of that bar below that demarcation line is essentially Tier 1 power. That's how much Blaine's will get at tier one rates. Anything above that line is what is subject to a market-based rate or potentially a Tier 2 rate. However, per the contract, there is this provision that we allow above high watermark load less than one average megawatt to not be subject to Tier 2. And that's where you kind of get this band, and that's what that red dashed line represents, that upper point of that band, the rate period high watermark plus one average megawatt. So as long as the load falls within those two bands, Blaine is not subject to Tier 2, again, which is the market-based rate. The reason I extended this out to 2020 and 21 is because I wanted to show that once you cross that line, then that whole portion becomes subject to Tier 2 rates. In the meantime, up until you get to that point where you cross, it's not subject to the Tier 2 rates. So, again, this is a forecast. A lot of things can change for the city in the next 8-9 years. The load, the size of the bars could change, but I just wanted to give a quick look at what Bonneville is looking at for the city of Blaine. And I have the purple box around 14 and 15 just to simply denote that's the next rate period we're looking at. So, and again, if you look at that, there's a lot of room in that band for the city of Blaine. So that's the rate period high watermark coming up. The last item I wanted to talk about is BPA's 75th anniversary. Our administrator, Steve Wright, has been very aggressive going out to public forums the past, six, 7 months, and talking about Bonneville's 75th anniversary, kind of celebrating not only Bonneville, but really kind of emphasizing the importance of the Columbia River to this region. And, you know, I'd be remiss if I didn't touch on it today, because it's been really important. And what I have on this next slide is, so our public affairs group put out a lot of material and a big PowerPoint presentation for county executives to use, but considering the time allotment, I kind of narrowed it down to about 6 bullets, just covering the various areas that Bonneville and the river have impacted lives for people in the Northwest. And for me, when I look through some of the material, you hear about things like from the wartime, from World War II, when Bonneville was just starting, and how, I hear statistics like the 25% of the ships that were used for the war, well, 25% of those ships were built using Northwest power. Or you hear about how there were 60,000 planes built for the war, and 40% of the aluminum that went into those planes came from Northwest power. And I'm kind of a history nerd, so that kind of, those statistics really, entertain me, and I find those very interesting. But beyond the historical perspective of the river, I mean, we enjoy a unique quality of life out here because of this river, specifically looking at pollution concerns. We don't face the same concerns that a lot of the East Coast states face in terms of CO2 emissions. In fact, the Northwest has about a third of the national average in terms of CO2 emissions. So the river also provides, recreation, irrigation, which impacts the economy as well. And but most significant, which, I'm sure the public utilities really care about, is on the next slide. There's a chart. It really doesn't need a lot of explanation, but the cost of electric generation. Federal Hydro is by far the lowest cost of generation that we have. I mean, even look at the next lowest alternative, EE, which stands for energy efficiency. Even energy efficiency is about a little over twice as much as it costs to generate off the federal system. So all this is to say that we significantly benefit from this hydro system and this river that we have, and we're very lucky to be in the Northwest. And Bonneville is proud to be a steward for the past 75 years of this great resource. The next few slides in your presentation are just pictures, decade-by-decade look on Bonneville's history. There's some quotes. I implore you to look through those. I'm not going to take time to go through them today, but they're really fascinating, especially if you like history. So that is kind of the bulk of my presentation. That is my presentation. So if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Questions, Kit?
Marcus, thanks for your time and the great information. The question I had is, I appreciate in the history portion there, you talked a little bit about the fact that that Bonneville is a economic driver for our region, and especially the aluminum that was used. And since you're here in Whatcom County, can you give us any information on when we might be able to see the deal done with our friends at Intellico to save those jobs there?
Me personally, I cannot give out those details. I can follow up with Raven. I don't have those details. I do not know when a deal is going to be done. I know it's a priority of our administrator, so I could say something will be done, but I don't know.
I didn't think you probably did, but I just figured if I didn't ask, yeah, you'd go back and say, oh, I don't care, it's not a big deal, but it is, so thanks.
Marcus, yes. we have water conservation in this area.
Mm-hmm.
Do we ever get into electrical conservation, electricity conservation in any of the cities that you deal with?
Well, the city of Blaine is very large proponent, especially in the past couple of years. Bonneville provides what we call energy efficiency incentive or funds for energy efficiency, and City of Blaine is actually has been doing a lot of projects recently, and they even got funds from Whatcom recently.
Yeah, I think that was at the last meeting or the one before.
Oh,
we had a contract with the Whatcom PUD, and they've given us $60,000 additional from their allocation because we've spent our allocation or our spending. So
I just was wondering, you know, we go out in the community, mm-hmm, and advertise water conservation. We try to educate the public in the benefits of conserving water.
Mm-hmm.
Do we ever do that with electricity? Do we ever go out to the community and say, here's ways you can save money by conserving your electrical power?
Well, Bonneville allows utilities to use the funds that we provide to do things like that. So Bonneville doesn't necessarily go out on behalf of the cities or the utilities that we operate, but we provide them funds where they can use that as a mechanism to go out into the city.
Okay. Paul?
You gave us estimates of the Blaine power usage starting, I believe, at 2013 and going out. Could you set that into context by giving us estimates of what we've actually used in, say, the last 10 years?
Okay. So if you look at that first bar, 2014, it's a little over 9 average megawatts. Last year, I believe, your total retail load was about 9 average megawatts as well. So it was slightly below what we forecast, a little growth.
Okay.
So you're about where that last bar was.
Great. Thank you.
Any other questions for Marcus? Marcus, thank you for coming. We really appreciate you being here, and thank you for the information that you provided.
No problem. Thank you
very much.
Excellent presentation.
Mayor?
Yes, Mr. City Manager.
Thank you. I don't recall whether it seems to me we gave a presentation to the council on our energy conservation program a while back. And we're very proud of it,
right.
And we are very aggressive. We've done some good projects. And maybe if the council, maybe we need to do it again, if we have some new council members.
I think it'd be wise.
Do you think?
Yep.
Okay.
So I think we'll
schedule something out there and have a fairly brief presentation on what it is we do and some of the projects that we've done that probably don't even know about.
I was just thinking of making it, you know, publicizing it so that everyone's aware, and then encouraging people to conserve.
Yeah. Well, we'll set something up down the road, and so you can see what we're doing.
Okay. Appreciate it. David Gallion and Jim Lucas are on our sheet here to make a presentation, but these are going to be council items coming up under council items. Do you want to save that till these items come up on the agenda?
Yeah, I didn't know they were council items.
Yeah, they are council items. So
okay, I'll wait.
You comfortable with that? Okay.
Is that part of the public hearing, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
I think David wants to talk about planning commission terms. That's not on our agenda.
Okay. That is not on our agenda, David. Okay. I'm sorry I didn't look to see. It's terms you would like to discuss.
Yes, sir.
So you're going to be on here twice then.
Lucky me.
David,
David Gallion's my name. I'm 1455 Madison Avenue, and I'd like to address the council on this issue about term limitations going from 6 years to 4 years for the Planning Commission. It came up before us, and initially most of us agreed that that was a good idea. It sounded like something that may enhance our ability to get more people to apply from a six-year to a four-year term. And continuity, there's a lot of reasons why the 4 years sounds good. But the more I thought about it, I realized, and Paul, and, well, most of the council had served on the Planning Commission, and no, it takes a while to get up to speed, at least a year in my case. So we're going to be bringing them to 4 years, and then we're really not going to get much out of them for 3 years, and then they're going to go into their next term. I was thinking of a great idea. It's 2 6-years is 12, but 3 4-years is 12. If we could think about making it the limitations, instead of a two-term max, make it a three-term maximum on the Planning Commission, then we'd retain the 12 years of service and get our 4-year term limitation. That was something to think about. Thank you.
Thank you, David. Any questions for David? Thank you, David.
You're welcome.
Jim, are you going to be, Jim Lucas, are you going to be on the, waiting for the council item?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
Right here. Right.
Thank you. Okay, the next item is written communications. I believe we have a fax dated July 13, 2012 from Joel Douglas regarding extension of development fees on the Cedar Court Senior Project. And we also have a fax dated July 17, 2012 from Joel Douglas regarding extension of terms for fees. Do we have any other correspondence, Sherry?
Yes, we do. We received an email dated July 22nd from Julie Don Christy Vogel regarding the Blaine BNSF Railway Station. And we received a letter dated July 20th from Blaine Neighborhood Association Salishan Chapter regarding the New City Hall HVAC system.
Okay. Has everyone got all that correspondence? And are there any questions for the staff? Thank you. Let's go on to the commission, committee, and board reports. Clark, do you have any for the Blaine Economic Development Advisor Committee?
Yeah, Ken and I have agreed that he'll be the representative from the council because it's actually an overlay. Both of us will be there. So Ken's agreed to do that. So I'll be out of that.
Okay. Ken, do you agree to that?
For the Northwest Economic Council, I do.
Okay. Did you attend the last meeting?
The last meeting of the council, I did. I reported on that at the last meeting.
Okay. Thank you. Clark, what about the Northwest Economic Council?
That's what I was actually talking about.
Yeah, we got it backwards.
Oh, we got it backwards.
Yeah. You know, the Blaine Economic Council, we have 7 members now, I believe. And actually a pretty active bunch, and we basically mapped all the vacant spaces in town, and we're just out there going door to door looking for tenants.
Good. That's good for you.
Bottom line.
How are we doing?
Got 7.
Okay.
7 tenants or 7 members?
We have 7 members.
I think he asked you how we're doing for tenants.
Tenants that are definitely.
Is that right?
Absolutely.
Oh, so you met tenants.
All you got to do is go ask.
All right.
Yeah.
Terrific.
That's
terrific.
Good.
Thank
That's
you.
Great.
Super. Okay, the next one is the Blaine Tourism Advisory Committee. Mr. Upner.
No reports.
Okay, the Blaine Chamber of Commerce. Bonnie Onion.
No report.
The RED Loan Committee. Bonnie and Jeffrey.
Nothing really to report. We still have a bank that has shown some interest and we'll be hearing from them definitely in the next couple weeks or so.
Any ETA on when we might get a definite on that, one way or the other?
They said they had to go up there and change the demand, so could be.
And that was just the other day, so probably another couple weeks, if I had to guess.
That's pretty pertinent to what we're talking about, some of these people.
By the way, there is no requirement that a bank be involved.
Yeah, and they can still apply.
The program does not require a bank. The city could administer the loan without a bank.
Yes, it could.
So just relieves us.
So it's not a requirement that we have a bank.
So this does not prevent them from applying? I mean, they can go ahead.
Mr. City Manager, are we giving that consideration, or just how does that work?
Well, I think if we if the bank that we're currently talking to does not want to do the program, I think we should consider setting up our own program.
Bonnie, you'll undertake that, I
yeah,
assume?
Yeah, and if we need to do that, we'll do that.
Okay. Next item is the Whatcom Transit Authority.
Like other agencies... Sorry?
Mr. Greenup?
Like other agencies within the county, we're into budget season. And like the city of Blaine, the WTA budgets very, very conservatively. Even with that in mind, the train wreck on the budget comes at about 2018. In other words, when the revenue line crosses the expense line. However, I'm not terribly concerned yet because, as I say, they have budgeted quite conservatively and each year seem to wind up coming in under budget.
Okay. We have the Library Committee and the Drayton Harbor Shellfish Advisory Committee, which are Charlie Hawkins, and Mr. Hawkins is not here tonight. The next item is the Senior Center Liaison, Mr. Olson.
No report.
Planning Commission, Mr. Jones.
I do have a report from the Planning Commission and the Park and Cemetery Board. Mr. Mayor, I'm going to come up to the podium. I've been waiting to give you one here on the from the Park and Cemetery Board for a little while because I was hoping to be able to deliver these both at more or less the same time. I believe Planning Commission is first on the agenda, so let me give you these. I don't mind passing them. I have two recommendations here from the Planning Commission and then also from the one from the Planning Commission, one from the Park and Cemetery Board related to park impact fee reinstatement. As you know, the Council docketed an item earlier this year, a comprehensive plan amendment to consider special programs related to park impact fees and also related to transportation impact fees and to look at ways to be able to reinstate those with less of a direct impact on downtown development. And these two reports or these two recommendations sort of were generated from those discussions, but they are not the direct result of those discussions. In other words, the comprehensive plan amendment will have a formal recommendation coming forward from the Planning Commission in the format you're used to, with a Planning Commission recommendation signed by the Planning Commission and the report given here to Council. In fact, that will probably be at the next Council meeting or perhaps the one after that. We've already been through Planning Commission. It's just a matter of getting it on your agenda. So these were stimulated by those discussions, but these are outside of the parameters of that discussion. And this recommendation from the Planning Commission, as is indicated there in the bold text, a motion on the June 28th, a motion was made and passed to recommend reinstatement of park impact fees. And that commercial construction be charged a park impact fee of a reduced value, and then the information on the vote is here. The other report I have here from the Park and Cemetery Board is somewhat similar. Again, stimulated from the discussions related to the comprehensive plan amendment, and in preparation for the Planning Commission meeting on the comprehensive plan amendment, we spoke with the Park and Cemetery Board to see if they had a recommendation they wanted to give to the Planning Commission relevant to the item, since they are not directly involved in comprehensive plan amendments, but are clearly quite involved in park issues. And the
the Park and Cemetery Board did have discussions. They considered some of the information we gave them from where the Planning Commission had had a sort of a study session on the topic, and ultimately they made a motion and passed it to recommend reinstating the park impact fee based on a flat fee program, with the fee being $1,200 adjusted annually as per the Seattle Consumer Price Index that was passed and seconded and passed. So as you can see, both of those sort of point in a general direction. I wanted to give you that, and I did want to give it to you outside of the context of that comprehensive plan amendment that's coming forward, because that really is a separate issue. That's really all I have on that.
Question?
Sure.
In order for these to be enacted, those council has to make that.
That's right. Neither one of these bodies actually technically has an advisory component on instituting an impact fee. They advise on park planning,
right,
in one instance, and on a wide variety of zoning and land use issues on the other instance, but neither one of those bodies is directly involved in instituting a fee program. And that would be something that council would need to do through a legislative change. It's written into our code, and the code would need to be amended.
Well, what's the logic behind charging commercial development park fees?
The logic is that customers and employees, basically people present in the community, take advantage of the park facilities, and they have a benefit to the community as a whole, not just to residents in the community. And that was kind of the direction from where that was coming. There are very few cities that do that. I believe Burlington has an impact fee for commercial development. It's, I believe, on a square footage basis in Burlington. I honestly don't know that for sure. It's my understanding, and I would need to do some more research. But there was discussion of that to that end at the Planning Commission, and ultimately they said they thought that would be a good idea, and that was the motion that was made.
Because instinctively, I suspect that the people who are working in the jobs in the commercial areas would also be people who are living in Blaine, and hence paying park impact fees through that venue. Is there any logic to that?
I think there is some logic to that. However, I know that many of us commute to other cities to work. I myself do that.
Okay, but if you're commuting, do you in fact use the parks?
I do.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions for Michael on this subject? Okay, thank you, Michael. Okay, the next, law and justice. Chief?
No meeting and no report, Your Honor.
Thank you, sir. Small City Caucus. Gary, do you have a... I don't think I've been to one in some time. Do you have anything to report on that, sir?
Well, the Small Cities Caucus met last Tuesday in Linden. Help me.
I wasn't at that one.
Oh, you weren't there, yeah. We had a discussion about the legislative package that Doug Erickson was putting forth. Trying to think if there was any other substantive item that was there. I don't think so. Recall on the agenda whether I don't think there was. If there was something, it wasn't important enough that it's.
Well, that's good.
It was a fairly short meeting, as about 10:30, I think we were on.
Okay. Thank you. Welcome, Council of Governments. I have no comment unless you have something, Gary. Okay, let's go to the city manager and staff reports.
Okay, as we always do, we'll start with Public Works. Raven?
Good evening. First, I wanted to make sure you all have a personal invitation from me to attend the ribbon cutting for the Peace Portal Community Trail Project, scheduled for the 8th of August at 10 a.m. at the Cherry Street intersection with Peace Portal. Also wanted to give you an update on various projects. first to let you know that the pre-construction meeting for Marine Drive actually was today, and the contractor is planning on starting the project in mid-August. Tomorrow we have the 8th Street pre-construction meeting, and I anticipate the contractor starting possibly even as soon as next week. We'll find out more details tomorrow. I wanted to let you know that your favorite project with Boss Construction is considered substantially complete. That's an official term for things that affect safety and function have been accepted and completed, and now they have a punch list that they're working toward. So we're not out of the woods, but we're at the end of the trail.
Okay.
And then wanted to let you know that regarding the 8th Street bid award last meeting, you awarded the base bid plus two alternates, 2 and 4. We were instructed by our Department of Transportation, however, because of the way the spec was written, that we could not award it in that fashion. So I wanted to let you know that that is a kind of a paperwork mistake on our part, in that we had a very specific priority of alternate approvals, and that wasn't one of them. 2 and 4, I guess we thought things would go more sequentially. So we did go ahead and contract with bid alternate 2, and our intention would be to change order something in the order of what bid alternate 4 was as we move forward with the project. And we might even have enough savings in other items that we can do even better than that. But that's what we're doing to try to be as consistent as possible with your wishes at the last meeting. And finally, I wanted to let you know that we received a couple of inquiries from council members as to the status of the review for the wetland and other issues affecting the viability of Mott's Hill Parkway easement for utilities and road services for East Lane. We have received a draft report from Wilson Engineering, and they're in the process of finalizing that. And we're anticipating having that report along with a separate staff review of the issues and relating to those alternatives for you in August. So I apologize that it's taking a little longer than we thought, but we'll make it worth the wait. And if you have any questions, I'm more available.
Any questions for Raven?
Raven, I'll mention that on the H Street project, you had brought up the issue of the bridge abutments or the bridge approaches, and we did write a letter to WashDOT and communicated to them that we thought that they should participate with us because it basically is their piece of infrastructure. And so we sent the letter, and I forget who signed it. Was Paul? Did you sign it?
Or no, Mayor Robinson did.
Who did?
I think Mayor Robinson did.
I did.
So that letter was sent, and we'll see what type of response that we get.
Okay.
Yeah, and that might affect how we approach that change order for that one item, because that's what it was the alternate 4 was the bridge approach.
Okay. If there are no other questions for Raven, let's move on to Chief Haslam.
No report, sir.
Okay. Community development, Michael?
I do have a report on New City Hall. It's show and tell time.
Ooh, color swatches. If you've been in City Hall recently, and I mean this one, not the new one, you may have noticed these easels in the front lobby. And I'm now on those easels. There are two, just like this, out there. Or there have been two, just like that, out there. Until I brought one in here. With the third floor and the fourth floor, floor plans. So we really haven't, since early on in this project, discussed much of this with council. And there's a tremendous amount of detail here on the two different floor plans for the third and fourth floor to really go over that here, but I encourage you to take a look you can get the gist, I think, of what's happening here. The fourth floor plan shows the council chambers, which here is indicated as the assembly room. And then some office space, employee break room, and a couple of conference rooms on the fourth floor. And the third floor is where the vast majority of City Hall activities will take place, except for these kinds of meetings and court. And we have, where you first come off of the elevator here, a service area for the cashier and utility billing, the lobby area for City Hall administration, and then down at the end of the corridor, a service area for community development services for planning and building permits. And then, of course, all the interior offices. And that plan is here. The plans are labeled based on the employee's job title, so you can kind of get a sense of where some of those things are happening. And it's really exciting going over there where construction is in progress, and there's both demo and construction happening at the same time as they move through various stages of the building. So these will be out in the lobby here for the next few weeks, I imagine. And you'll have a chance to take a look at those. I also sent out an invitation to you through email for a meeting, for a tour over at the Banner Bank building. It would be August 30th, which is a Monday, at 4 p.m. Probably take about 45 minutes or so, depending upon how much you want to know and what all we see and question when we're over there. And that same night, there's a strategic planning.
Michael, you're talking the 30th of August?
I'm sorry, July. Thank you, Dennis. July 30th.
Conceptually, have you changed anything much since the last time we took a walking tour?
Well, we've changed a lot, but nothing substantial. Lots of fine-tuning. The thing that's nice about it... The concept's still the same. What's nice about it is probably by July 30th, the demo will be completed, and the majority of the sheetrock installation will have occurred, so it'll be much easier to visualize than it was earlier when it was, you know, pay no attention to that wall, it'll be gone. Now that wall will be gone, in fact, when you're there next time if you come, and the new wall will be up in the other location. So you can start to see it now, but in another week it'll be real obvious.
Michael, help me. I'm confused. What date did you have? July the...
I said August 30th, and I misspoke. It's July 30th. Monday, July 30th.
At what time?
4 p.m.
4 p.m., and we have a meeting at 5:30.
At 5:30, the strategic planning session here. So it would be before that. And give you a little bit of a break in between and time to get back over here.
Super.
We will meet over at the Banner Bank building in the lobby on the ground floor and then go up. So you're all invited to attend, and I know that some of the staff is also going to come. Any questions on any of that? Okay, so I wanted to show you a little bit of what one of the many things we've been working on related to the building. It's very challenging to remodel. If you haven't been through it, just take my word for it. It's very challenging to remodel. And it's also challenging to work with an existing color scheme when you're not completely remodeling and tearing out everything and starting from scratch. You might recall the building has a substantial amount of pink colors in it, and that was particularly interesting. But we have put together some color schemes that we'll be applying in the building, and this is for the fourth floor here. And what this indicates is the existing wall color, which will basically continue to be the existing wall color, and a series of accent colors here on the top that will be available to use in that space. Probably some of that will be applied in the council chambers, but also employees will be able to pick, if they want to, from the accent colors, if they chose to, for instance, paint one wall in their office to give it a little bit more interest than the basic whitish-gray walls. Some of the existing carpet is staying, and this will be the new carpeting that's installed in some of the other rooms. There's some existing tile, which is a pink and black granite that is staying, and we're working with that. And then the wood here is a piece of the wood trim. So the fourth floor color scheme is essentially that. I'll try to figure out somewhere to leave these out as well, but they don't fit on the easels quite so nicely. The third floor is... also challenging. The third floor has a couple of different wall colors going on. There was quite a bit of pink, and there was also the gray carpeting, most of which is staying, and most of it's in really good shape. But in some other areas, it's not in such great shape. And in some other areas, we knew that high traffic volumes, when we changed from an office that's visited by only a couple of people a day to an office that's visited by, you know, maybe more than 100 people a day, this gray carpet might not hold up real well in some of the hallways. So we have this dark-colored carpeting that will be in the public hallway, these dark rubber matting surfaces that will be in some really high traffic areas, and then this gray-colored carpeting that will be installed in some areas where the carpet has worn so much it needs to be replaced. A couple of offices, for instance, had some big stains and that kind of thing. So we'll be working with those. And then we have the two existing wall colors, and then similarly a set of accent colors that will be able to be used in different areas. The idea here being that as you walk down the hall, all the colors are complementary to each other, and if you look in one office and then in the next, it won't be, you know, changing from pink to lime green and back again. They'll all be kind of in the same general color scheme. I did mean to mention when I was talking about the fourth floor some color choice decisions that we put together for the furniture. These are some of the fabrics that will be used in the council chambers on some chair cushions. And then table and chair finishes as well. So it's all kind of in a pretty neutral color scheme to go with some of that carpeting and again, some of the pink tones that are still up there. And then the furniture on the third floor for the new office furniture will be in this real dark wood laminate color. And everything is still on track, I'm happy to say, with this time schedule. So we look forward to being in there, and I'm sure you will as well, in the early part of September. Working with the construction contractors, we have encountered a few interesting issues, some challenges, some things that we didn't expect along the way. We've also been working on some deductive change orders with them as well. So far so good. We've been able to reduce expenses at least as much as the expenses have been increased in other areas. But I hope not to find too many more increases, because I think we've tapped things out at this point. But it's moving along, and it's exciting. So July 30th, come on over and you can take a walk through. Any questions?
Bonnie has a question.
Michael, so we'll move in sometime in September, and then we're going to be in there for a month or so. Will we have an open house for the public?
We'll be moving in on September 7th, and I believe at this point, tentatively, an open house is scheduled for Monday the 10th, which will be a council meeting night. So our first full day in there will be a full day. We'll be there well into the evening, and I think, like I said, are scheduling an open house that night, but it's tentative, hasn't been announced yet until right now.
Moving in on Saturday.
We'll be moving in on. We'll be initially starting move in on Thursday. City Hall will be closed on Friday. Uh-huh. This building will close on Friday,
yeah.
And we will reopen on Monday, the following Monday, in the new location. So we'll have a one-day disruption of services.
All of the furniture will be placed in advance, and all of the IT. Wiring and all of that's involved in that will be done in advance. So it's primarily moving stuff.
It's mostly moving files and office supplies and those kinds of things. There will be a few pieces of furniture, but as Gary mentioned, all the furniture that we're purchasing will be assembled in place in the offices about 2 weeks before we move in. And some people will actually probably move a fair amount of stuff in advance, but there is ultimately that day where your stuff, the things you use on a day-to-day basis, have to get from one place to another place. And obviously some of the files that you're using pretty regularly, you can't move too many days in advance, but there will be a sort of a transition. Only from the public's perspective, they should generally only notice that one day. It'll probably be a little hectic around here for a week or so before, but that really, that one day, which is the Friday that will be closed, will be the most dramatic thing that anyone should notice.
So on the 10th, you're having an open house, but, I mean, what I had in mind when I said open house was actually giving people tours so they can go through and see what offices there are and where the offices are on the third floor, as well as the fourth floor. If we're going to have any time like that where people can have an opportunity to see our spaces here.
I don't know. That's a great question. I think that's something we'll bring up with staff.
Some people would be interested in that, seeing just what there is.
Yeah.
And so I'd like to see something like that.
Ken has a question.
When we had talked months ago when you and I did the tour about the furniture for the council chambers, you were sort of just beginning that process. Can you fill us anymore? I'm less concerned about chairs. It's more sort of the look of it. If you recall, you and I had a conversation about this. And what the tables and the counters are going to look like, and, and knowing that we want them to be portable, but also to be a little more professional.
Right. I'm working with a cabinet contractor, cabinet maker that makes custom cabinet assemblies, and we are working on a design now for the dais, and currently the concept is in some ways similar to this, about 4 feet high, a little bit higher than this, wood fronted, and it would be flat across the front. The council will no longer be in an L. Council will be a straight setup, and in the center of that there will be a larger piece of furniture that sort of has a rounded front is the consideration now, although that's sort of up in the air. We're looking at what makes the most sense and what's best for the budget. But it would be a wood front, which would be intended to be portable so that it could be completely removed, but also to be modular so that it can be used in a jury trial, so that the two elements, one on each side, could be moved to be placed in front of the jury box, and the center podium section left and placed, you know, to remain in front of the judge. So it actually be kind of nice right now if we have a jury trial. I believe the jury is sat right up here behind that, where the tables are removed and that kind of thing. So we would have a much more flexible arrangement. But just starting that process, we've had some discussions with the cabinet maker, but we don't really have a final version. 8-inch high stage is what we're looking at for council, so it would be a little bit taller than what sits here.
That's fine.
You're welcome.
Michael, would we have an opportunity to provide any input into that?
Into
how we would like the council chamber to look?
A lot of that has happened. A lot of the decisions have been made just based on what the room dictates and the need to maximize the audience and that kind of thing. We had some early conversations on that, but certainly we can come back with some more information on that, and if it's something that, you know, council's unhappy with, we can look at changes.
The council members would be interested in that.
Yeah, if you could have a sketch of what you kind of finally decide on before you finally have it built, just so we can kind of look at it, that would be nice.
We can certainly try to do that. We are running up to a very short timeline. Yeah, council may be sitting behind something temporary if we don't move forward.
Okay.
We really do need to move forward with what we've done. I mean, to be honest with you, you know, we're getting very close to moving, and we've ordered $56,000 worth of furniture, and it's on the way. And so, I mean, a lot of wheels are in motion here. So it'd be very difficult to change anything very much.
I can assure you it'll be nicer than this. And I will bring a sketch back for you. But realistically, it may be once it's under construction.
Is there a wall behind the dais?
Well, it's indoors. It's indoors, so yes, but the wall is not right behind you like that. It's a solid wall with two doors. There's no windows back there.
Anything above it, like the city logo or
currently that's not planned because there's a door near the center of that space. It wouldn't really work all that well. We may decide to do that. Council may decide to budget that for a future budget year because it is not in the cost realities at this point. We are looking at the front of the assembly having the city's logo, much like you might see on the front of this in a lot of places, only it would be on the front in front of the mayor's seat on that new. So it might be redundant to have it above, actually, but you'll see that when you go in. Okay.
Clark, do you have a question?
No, I was just going to tell Brian. That's a holding cell. Isn't that correct? that a jail cell for the...
Well, there is something behind the wall, and yeah, that's one of the uses. but there is a wall there, I think, which your primary question being, it's not the windows. You're sitting along one of the interior walls. The windows are that way and that way. The windows are west and north, and the council is along the east wall with the entry on this side over here.
Michael, have we agreed on the signage for the outside of the building? We'll identify it as City Hall.
The on signage generally, they're making some decisions right now about the interior signage, which is kind of important. But Debbie and Michael are working on that. The exterior signage, the plan is to have a monument sign on the corner with a flagpole and landscape, something that says Blaine City Hall or Blaine Municipal Building or something like that. That is not going to be in the initial project. We can't afford it.
That's too bad.
Battle Bank's still going to be on top, though, right?
Yes. Hopefully in this budget, as we put this year, next year's budget together, we'll be able to find the money to do that signing on the outside. But in terms of the budget that we have right now to do the building, it just doesn't fit.
And it's also important to us to do it well. We don't want to squeeze it from the budget. There is going to be signage for City Hall. It's just not going to be that monument sign initially. The box sign will be used, and there will be City Hall signage on that, and the monument sign hopefully will come from a future budget. I do believe that we presented to council, I might be losing track of things because there's been so much of this going on, but I believe we presented the sign plan to council at one point. Is that correct?
Yeah.
And so essentially we're moving forward with that.
Yeah.
But the one thing, as Gary mentioned, the monument sign, we just decided as a budget item. For one, we needed that budget allowance kind of to look at some other things, some flexibility, and we wanted to make sure when that sign goes in, it's a really nice sign and not just say, well, we have $3,000, let's make it work. That wasn't the right approach. Okay.
Any other questions? Thank you, Michael.
Thank you.
Okay, let's... Jeff, do you have anything?
No report.
Okay. Sherry?
No report.
And Michael has already mentioned that our on the 30th of this month is the next strategic planning meeting. I gave you some information that I hope that that you'll have an opportunity to review. Because we'll be using it at the next meeting. I also would like to report that all of our collective bargaining agreements are now completed. The last unit that I met with you about, the electrical workers, accepted your counteroffer. And so they're all done just in time for us to start doing them again.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's nice to have that behind us, if even for a little while, before we have to start working on the next one. Now, these were, you'll recall that they were all three-year agreements. Am I right, Jeff?
That's correct.
They were all three-year agreements. So when I say we have to start again, they all had wage openers, as you recall. So at some point, we'll be... you know, depending on the bargaining unit and how they, what they want to do, I'm assuming we'll be discussing wages with all of the units over the next little while. So. Anyway, that's happy to have that behind us, and appreciate the council's patience in getting all of that done. Other than that, I have nothing else. Unless you have some questions for us. Okay, thank you, Mayor.
Okay, next item.
Question?
Yes, certainly.
I got asked a couple of times now, what's the situation on overnight camping
down at Marine Park or people pulling in with RVs?
You mean just kind of out of the blue?
Yeah, is there a system set up for doing that? Or
Overnight camping in the parks is prohibited, except as permitted by a special permit from the city manager for organized events. So for something like Drayton Harbor Days, for instance, where there's an ongoing history of a special event.
But if someone pulls in there late at night, in an RV,
pulls up onto the lawn in Marine Park and decides they're going to spend the night, that would be illegal.
Mm-hmm. And the hookups aren't electrified?
There are electric hookups over there, but they're normally turned off. Unless there's a special event for which provision.
Turn them on.
The question came from people that are in the arena. They see this sometimes.
Yeah, they see a hookup and they kind of think, oh, wow, am I the only one that saw this?
What a deal.
Yeah, what a deal. Just pull in.
Why do you do that? Any other questions for the staff? Okay, the next item on our agenda is a public hearing. This is going to be a closed record hearing, appeal of the Brickyard Cottage variance. And I have to read something here. This is a hearing is a quasi-judicial in nature, and therefore the appearance of fairness and conflict of interest rules apply. Quasi-judicial actions are defined as actions of the council which determine legal rights, duties, and or privileges of specific parties in a hearing. The hearing must be fair in three respects: form, substance, and appearance. Do any council members, and this includes the mayor, have an interest in this property or issue, or stand to gain or lose any financial benefit as a result of the outcome of this hearing, or have any disclosures to make?
No. I attended the Planning Commission's public hearing, but I did not participate. And I have attended the original when they were doing the original Brickyard Cottage proposal.
In 06.
I guess first out of it is this isn't about whether the Brickyard Cottage would be approved or not. This is just about a side yard setback variance request. And if I clarify, you attended the Planning Commission meeting on the side yard setback?
Yes.
Okay. I guess, Mr. Mayor, the question is, there any objection? There's Mr. Swanson's the appellant saying no. So
okay. Okay, is there anyone in the audience who objects to my participation or any other council member's participation in these proceedings? Okay. Mr. Sitkin, would you...
Sure, I'll introduce this for council. It's again, as I mentioned, this is an appeal of denying a variance request by the City Planning Commission. The Brickyard Cottage, is, so you understand, has been approved. That's the question about that project is not before you, and you shouldn't be going into that. This is just about the city code requiring an 8-yard side setback for single-family homes. The applicant requested that to reduce to 4 feet. The Planning Commission denied that, and from their notice of decision was two factors, two criteria, and it's regarding criteria 3 and criteria 4, you have the Planning Commission's findings of fact. You have a record that's been prepared and submitted before the Planning Commission. You have the appellant statement in the record. So you know that your review, because the closed record hearing is limited to the record that's been made at the Planning Commission open record hearing. And no new evidence, no new facts can come in. There can be argument from the appellant, but even Planning Commission Chair is here to make a presentation on what the Planning Commission's decision was. He cannot add new information or try to add additional factors as to what the Planning Commission considered or why. It would just be Mr. Gallion's opinion that that's not part of the record. So your decisions based on the record that was before the Planning Commission on those really those two questions of whether criterion 3 or 4 of the Planning Commission made an error in determining that and whether you variance should have been approved. Process tonight that I'd recommend is you hear from the appellant. Mr. Swanson here is representing the appellant. You can hear a presentation from Mr. Gallion. Again, your findings of fact, the Planning Commission in the record, and then give Mr. Swanson a chance to respond if he cares to, and you can, after that, you can go into executive sessions, potential litigation, and it's on your agenda if you so choose. You can come out and have a deliberation, or you can set it over for deliberation another time. And we can proceed from there, and if you have questions for me, please ask staff. I'd recommended approval of the variance request, and that where their recommendation was part of the record, and that's why I'm leading this out instead of staff because of the discord between staff and Planning Commission. So I suggest, Mr. Mayor, you call Mr. Swanson and bring him up.
Mr. Swanson, would you like to come forward, please?
Mayor, council members, I'm Jack Swanson. My work address is 900 DuPont Street, Bellingham. And it's been a while since I've been up here, and I'm sorry about that.
Yeah.
There was a couple of years, and I spent a lot of time up here. Honestly, I miss the place. It's a great little town. This, let me just sort of summarize where we're at here. I represent the Brickyard Cottages Homeowners Association, who own what amounts to developed lots. They are all 29 feet wide, and they requested a variance from the code, which requires an 8-foot side yard setback for a single-family home in this particular zone. It's a residential office district, and the request was to reduce that setback to 4 feet from the 8 feet. I noticed that John almost slipped there when he was talking about setbacks, and he almost said 5 feet instead of 8 feet, because in my experience, a 5-foot side yard setback is a highly standardized setback in many, many jurisdictions. And I was a little surprised when I got involved in this appeal to learn that Blaine has an 8-foot side yard setback, which seemed excessively large to me in a central core city where we're talking about a piece of infill property here. And normally you're trying to create higher densities there. And one of the ways you can do that is by putting buildings closer together. Seemingly a good idea because it takes the infrastructure requirements, reduces the cost of those, and also provides you with an opportunity for essentially a higher density, more taxpayers, more revenue, more ratepayers to help the city with the other things that it does and provide those monies. As I said, the issue here really is that these lots are all 29 feet wide, and if you follow the 8-foot side yard setback, each home would only be 13 feet wide. And that is what I would say an undesirable limitation to put on those houses and make them less desirable in the marketplace where those houses must compete with others. And that desirability determines whether there are buyers out there for them, and whether there are buyers out there for them actually determines whether or not it makes sense to develop them at all. In this case, as was mentioned earlier, the staff recommended approval of this variance and basically stated that the variance is in the public interest because more desirable homes can be constructed in lieu of what was originally planned for this property. That plan was a brainchild of Terry Galvin and Ted Mishiakoff, and they agreed that this development would have a zero setback on one side and a wider setback on the other side. And I've seen this in a number of occasions where they allow a little bit more open space on the lot for living area or garden or whatever. And it is a decent concept. what I have discovered is that concept has not necessarily been embraced by the marketplace as much as you might like it to be, and homes of that nature are more difficult to sell. I say that with a little footnote. My son bought one 3 weeks ago in the Barclay area of Bellingham. It's a duplex building with a lot laying down the center of it, and it has a nice little backyard in it. And I won't tell you what he paid for it, but it was cheap. And I think it was cheap just from what I said, is that that type of building style really has not been as well received as a regular single-family home with spaces between the two houses. I did learn a new name, though, and that was paired housing. And that's what, I guess that's what they call these. And I didn't know that. I've always called them just zero lot line houses. What I would suggest to you, though, is that it's possible that this model of development failed because it was difficult to achieve financing, difficult to convince bankers that there's a market. All of that came along in the combination of some tough economic times. So that's one of the explanations that this particular model of development is right now failing in Blaine. And the request here is not only to, well, let me put it this way. The request here is to deviate from that original proposal and go to single-family homes with a little bit more width than would be allowed under the current rules, just to avoid another failed development that won't be able to be successful. The staff analyzed this, and there are the four criteria. And in the supplemental materials that they sent to you, and I guess they gave you new ones tonight because the printer didn't print it all, but I do outline what the staff identified as being the important issues in their analysis. The Planning Commission disagreed with the staff with regard to the last two criteria for approval. The criteria number three says that the special conditions and circumstances do not result from the actions of the applicant. And the staff's comment on that was the Brickyard Cottages project was originally proposed by Ted Mishaikoff with some LLC with a bunch of names in it. Out of Bellingham, the lot configuration is not the result of the actions of the applicant. I would share a little more with you on that. Normally, the actions of a previous owner are not construed to be a self-imposed did not result from the actions of the applicant. That's also referred to as a self-imposed hardship is another term that they use to describe that. And the reason for that, I can't cite a specific case that says this, but I can tell you about Lewis versus City of Medina, which is a Washington case. And that's the only case I could find in Washington, and I found one other in Pennsylvania, where the actions of the previous owner were actually attributed to a new owner. In this case, the current owner bought this property in foreclosure from a bank. They had no ability to influence what had happened prior to that, and so this is not a self-imposed hardship. In the Lewis versus Medina case, it turns out that the new owners actually acquired the property from their mother, and that there was evidence in the record to reflect that they had actually participated in the subdivision of the property, which resulted in a substandard lot, and then it was a 20,000 square foot minimum zone. One of the lots that they subdivided off was 12,000 square feet. After the subdivision was completed, they bought the property from the mother, and then they came in and said, we'd like a variance to build on this 12,000 square foot lot. The court said no, and that was upheld on appeal. That's not the situation here. There's no relationship, there's no connection, there's no nexus, there's nothing between the prior owner, Tim Mishaikoff, and the current owner, and therefore this hardship that the current owner has is not self-created, not self-imposed. And so it simply, that criteria is met by the facts of this case. And I wasn't at the Planning Commission meeting. I don't know exactly what happened there, but I suspect there must have been some confusion. And the facts do not reflect that this is the self-imposed hardship. Criteria number four says that the granting of the variance requested will not confer on the applicant any special privilege that is denied by this division to the other lands, structures, or buildings in the same district. The staff's comment on that was that special privileges would only be granted if the commission denied a similar variance request by another property owner. Considering this project has the only fully serviced 29-foot lots in town, staff finds it highly unlikely that this situation would present itself again. Therefore, staff recommends that special privileges would not be granted by authorizing the variance request. It should be noted that in 2010, the commission granted a variance for 475 F Street to reduce the side yard setback to 5 feet for a 25-foot lot. And I might add to that that there are numerous old plats that I'm sure you've all seen that have lots sometimes that are as narrow as 25 feet. There are just dozens of them in Bellingham. They're here in Blaine. They're virtually everywhere in the Northwest. And I think in many cases, people in New York City somewhere actually drew those plats without much thought to what the ground looked like or anything. You can go out to Lake Sammamish, you can look at plats out there that have little dinky lots, and when you go out and look at the land, it's straight up and down. So my point there is that it's very common to see variance requests. So when you have really narrow lots like this, many of them are over 100 years old. In this case, these are not that old, but they pose the same kinds of difficulties in terms of developing a reasonable house in a neighborhood setting. I would also add to that that what we're trying to do with, we grant variances to eliminate unnecessary hardships. And I think, if I read the minutes correctly, I think where the Planning Commission got stuck a little bit was they had never granted a variance that was any smaller in width than 5 feet. And they did not necessarily understand that the Planning Commission, when considering variances, has the power to grant as much relief as is necessary, but not necessarily any more than that. As an alternative to just turning down this variance, the Planning Commission could easily have said, 4 feet's too small, we don't really have a precedent for that in the community, but a five-foot side yard would be acceptable because that's not only commonplace in other jurisdictions, but it's also consistent with other variances that have been granted in the city previous to this time. I guess my bottom line is you have serious lots here. They're not easy to come by. I know you've got a lot of projects that have been approved in the city. I've been involved in some of them. And there's no development occurring out there for a variety of reasons. But one of them is the cost of providing the infrastructure in the economic climate that we have and in the marketplace that we have right now. And I would suggest that it would be advisable from the city's perspective to try and encourage this development by giving them some relief under this code so that they could develop a nice, saleable, desirable single-family home versus a less desirable single-family home that is only 13 feet wide. I mean, by the time you take the width of the walls out, you're crunching down there to about 12 feet of living space, you know. That's about 6 feet right there, so it's pretty tight. And so that it seems like this is a reasonable request to grant a variance, and that it would possibly promote other goals of the city. For example, having more people on your sewer system so that your treatment plant gets ratepayers. This is also land over right off of the main street that runs into downtown Blaine. It's sort of the gateway to Blaine, and it would be unfortunate, I think, to have a serviced piece of property sit there and do nothing when it could be it could have some really quite nice homes on it that would beckon more people to come to Blaine and live here. I heard Michael tonight mention that he commutes. I know many others do. In fact, it seems like 3 or 4 years ago when I was up here working, we got some numbers on how many people actually work in Blaine and live elsewhere. And one of the reasons for that is that the state of housing in Blaine is not meeting the needs of some of those people, or they would be living here. Who would want to spend, I don't know what is gas today. I bought gas on the way out here. It's like almost $4. Who would want to drive a long commute if you could find a desirable place to live close to your work? I certainly wouldn't. This request seems small, and I believe it's in the public interest. And a desirable home is really what is in the city and the public's interest here, and I would encourage you to grant this applicant some relief. I guess I almost want to say, I spent a lot of time from the Planning Commission there for some years, and they work hard, and they do their best, and I don't mean to say that they did anything wrong here, but I think there was somewhat a little bit of confusion about what the extent of their powers were when they decided that they would deny the 4 feet rather than maybe consider a 5 foot side yard. So, unless you have questions, I thank you for your attention.
Paul, I have a question.
Okay.
I have two questions, perhaps they're from Mr. Sitkin. First of all, am I correct in assuming that the only issues before us tonight are whether or not the Planning Commission made an error in its review of items 3 and 4?
You can review the request to grant the variance as requested with and consider the staff recommendation. So it is in that context, and you're hearing a de novo review. You don't sit just, was there an error of law? It's a lack of supportive evidence.
And second, is our decision tonight to be only a yes or no on the variance, or can we propose a five-foot setback on either side?
You can modify the... You have the ability to impose conditions on your approval and your decision, and can impose conditions. I would suggest that if you are thinking of going to 5, you have that discussion. That's not what the request is originally, and it's the appeal is that the Planning Commission erred. So what's before you is the request for a 4. If you wanted to come back and I got to the point of having a discussion of 5, you can engage that question with the applicant.
I am not sure I understand that.
You can ask the applicant if that's something okay. They'd be willing to live with.
Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any other further questions? Thank you, Jack.
I have one.
No.
It's Mr. just general. Is there
could you come back, please?
Is there some fire department requirement for setbacks, side yard setbacks?
Yeah, that's where the 5-yard setback in zoning came from. Was the fact that there was a 5-yard, there's a ten foot separation between buildings.
Mr. Swanson, could you?
And maybe it's a building code question, really.
Okay, so, I don't need. Yeah, I have been involved with this before.
Well, I'm just going to say it's a building code question. The 5, 8, or 5 is not the building code requirement. I believe the building code can allow you to scale that based upon your firewall that's constructed and down to 3 or below. Depending upon what your firewall construction is, it'll be a building official decision. It's separate from zoning.
Okay.
I would not consider the building code issue here. This is a zoning side yard setback, strictly, so I would leave it to that question.
Thank you, Mr. Swanson.
Sorry, Chair.
Mr. Gallion, would you like to come forward and present the Planning Commission's?
Would I like to?
Yes, sir. Would you?
I think I have to.
Thank you very much.
We appreciate you being here.
Oh, you're welcome. I wish I had the liberty that Mr. Swanson has to make the comments that he made, but I have to stick to actually what was said at the meetings, and I cannot elaborate at all. The minutes for the last meeting that we had, the second vote, hasn't been brought to me for signature, so I can't talk about those, and those have something to do with this project. So what I'd like to talk about are the two criterias and the mood of the Planning Commission concerning the two issues, the two criterias. Criteria three, and that was one that was we had decided that was a problem, and the commission, several of the commission members brought up that they believed that the hardship that was spoken about in the special condition was brought upon by the applicant because the applicant knew he was buying lots that were 29 feet and that he knew that he would not be able to build the building that he wants to build on those lots. I came up to that determination by listening to the applicant speak. So I felt that criteria three wasn't met on the fact that the hardship was created by the applicant. It wasn't a condition that there was no choice for. One thing that we do when we evaluate like CUPs and variances, those have a higher standard, and we want all the criteria to be met, and if any of them aren't met, then we have to deny the request. On item criteria four, we believe that the 4-foot setback would set a precedent to where the next project that comes up, and we asked Michael if could this happen again? Could we have another situation? And he said not likely, but he said it is possible. And interesting that the very reason that Michael was using to accept the variance criteria for the setback was from another setback that we had made in 2010 to 5 feet. So we're using that criteria. So we will get somebody coming in wanting a 3-foot setback or a 2-foot setback. And we'll say, well, we can't deny it because we gave a 4-foot setback. So we thought that 4 feet was too much, was too small. We believe that Blaine had the wider 8-foot setbacks. As Mr. Swanson mentioned, he didn't understand why Blaine has that. And that is because Blaine likes wide open spaces. We like wider spaces. And that's the feeling I've been getting working with the Planning Commission. So if we erred, then we erred that we didn't think about suggesting a 5-foot setback. We didn't do that because the 4-foot was too small and we denied it. I would be much more comfortable to answer questions that because you have the reports before you. And if you want to know a specific reason why something was done or said, I would feel more comfortable doing that than a narrative.
Are there any questions for Mr. Gallion?
Yeah, sure.
Paul, Mr. Pino?
So if I understand you correctly, Mr. Gallion, the issue of a 5-foot setback did not arise.
That's correct.
I'm not sure if this is a fair question or not, but what would the tenor of the council have been if it did arise?
I don't think, Mr.
Fair enough. I withdraw.
He can't.
I withdraw.
In that fashion. Mr. Gallion's in a difficult position to come up here and speak as chair, but also but not speak for the commission. That's a difficult position for him to be in.
Not a problem.
Are there any other questions?
Question, but not for Mr. Gallion. Probably Michael.
Okay, go ahead.
So with a 4-foot setback, how much actual space would there be between houses?
From wall to wall, there would be 8 minus some incidental encroachment due to things like windowsills and other, you know, minor. Okay. We measure setbacks from the foundation line, and if you were to go out and look at your home, the concrete goes up. The siding the windowsill, those things extend beyond an inch or 2 inches, but it would be
no, foundation,
four plus
foundation.
Four being eight to foundation with some incidental encroachment. And then we also allow some things such as bay windows. So some you know, the bay window wouldn't run the entire length of the wall, but in some instances there would be some architectural projections, which we actually encourage through our code because they add value to the aesthetic of the home.
Mm-hmm. Bonnie, if you want to know, I'm standing here, my hand's 8 feet high. Mm-hmm. So that's how far it'd be between the buildings.
Okay.
Just to give you a visual.
Okay.
Are there any other questions? This is a legal matter, and there's a potential, I guess, for litigation, and I would appreciate if someone would entertain a motion to go into executive session.
I so move.
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. I'd suggest rather than...
Well, no, we haven't had a vote on it.
Oh, I'm sorry. Please, could we vote on it, please? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Motion carries 5-1. I would suggest we meet in the back room.
Before you go, Commissioner, I think it'd be probably 15 minutes.
Correct.
No action will be occurring inside. I wanted to, before you go, it was an appellant who has a chance to rebut.
Oh, I'm sorry.
We should give Jack wants to say anything, rebuttal, give him a chance to. The other thing I was going to point out, there is a staff report. There was 8 conditions on the staff report. Michael brought up that at the commission meeting there was a 9th condition regarding the measurement of building height calculation, that it's an average from the midpoint of the property line, and that was a 9th condition, and it's a detail. If you got to your action, we can address it.
Mr. Sawson, would you like to rebut?
One quick word.
I would just point out with regard to criteria number 3, the self-imposed hardship criteria. If a property owner was prevented from getting a variance because he knew about a defect in the property, whatever it was, that might be grounds for a variance when he bought it, no one would ever get a variance. Think about it. He would be prevented from doing so because that knowledge would preclude that possibility. And we all know that that's not the way it works. So,
any other questions? Thanks, Watson. Okay, let's retire to the back room for the executive session.